Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You know, the boys are down by and this documented, but you guys should get an opportunity to see some footage of our days growing up and what we all was going through, what was surrounding us, the atmosphere, but more importantly, the guidance that we got from Coach Wade, because he was dealing with a lot of egos, and for him to be able to manage those egos to manifest and to become one as opposed to trying to become an individual, it really was special.
There he is, Tyrone Muggsy Bogues, joined us on our Be More Opinionated podcast. We'll have clips from him coming up. You can hear the podcast at bmoshow.com. Let's continue the talk right now about Dunbar. We bring in Bobby Sablehouse, who grew up in Baltimore and played quarterback at McDonough in the 1990s, now an executive film producer out in Los Angeles, joining us here on Sports with Coleman. Thanks for taking the time, Bobby. Appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
All right, the entire nation will be buzzing this week when ESPN debuts the Baltimore Boys, the story of the great Dunbar teams 35 years ago that went 59-0. And Bobby, how did this all come together? Many Baltimore folks, I'm sure, are involved behind the scenes in this project featuring the undefeated Dunbar teams of 81-83. And can you tell us about some of the Baltimore folks involved and where you found some of the archive video as well that will be shown on the documentary?
Sure. We, I was, you know, growing up in Baltimore and being a huge sports fan, I knew about this story. I was familiar with it at a very young age. And, you know, then cut to me being a producer out here in Los Angeles and sitting down with a producing partner of mine on the film. You know, we were talking about wanting to do a 30 for 30, and obviously easier said than done. But the first story that popped into my head, which I felt was obviously a Baltimore treasure, but the rest of the nation probably didn't know its origins, was the Dunbar basketball story. And so from that point, I knew that I had to get Coach Wade on board. I knew I had to get Muggsy on board to get this thing going and package it and take it to ESPN. So had a conversation with Muggsy, had a conversation with Coach Wade, told them I thought this was a story that had to be told. On a national level, I think it was one of those great kept secrets. I don't think it was a secret that those guys went on to play in the NBA, but I think to the nation it was a secret of their origin story, and I thought it was fascinating and interesting. And so, yeah, from that point on, we went over to ESPN, and this has never happened to me in a pitch, but we pitched ESPN, and halfway through the pitch, they bought the show. And from that point on, we just started putting the pieces together. And you brought up one of the challenges, which was finding archival footage from back in the early 80s in high school. And that was difficult. But you know, we were able to find a lot of footage over at the University of Baltimore, where a couple of the local stations keep their archives pre-1986. So we found some real gems. But it was certainly a challenge in the beginning. But we uncovered, with some help, some real gems.
Jerry Coleman joined by Bobby Sablehouse, who is the executive producer of the Boys of Baltimore, which will debut on ESPN tomorrow night. Now, back in the fall of 2016, Alejandro Dunois wrote his book, The Boys of Dunbar. How did that end up becoming a documentary, Bobby, not to be confused with the 30 for 30 series, which, I don't know, is a 30 for 30 gone away? Is this different than a 30 for 30?
No, this is a 30 for 30. What the interesting thing is, Ali, we were introduced to Ali by Coach Wade. Coach Wade said, listen, I'd love to be involved in this project, but we have a guy who's writing the book on our 1981-82 season. And right when he said that, I was so excited because I thought, here's a guy that's been involved in this story for years. He's going to be an encyclopedia of knowledge about this story. He actually came on and became a producer of the documentary, and Ali was a real asset and has become a close friend But having him to be able to pick up the phone and say, Ali, what happened at this game? Or Ali, what happened, you know, with this player? He knew the story more intimately well than anybody that I've ever met. So he was a real asset.
Now, one thing that you don't do, and you've received acclaim for it, is not sugarcoating how rough life was and really still is in the neighborhood where the Dunbar players grew up.
I mean, you know, as a kid, you're growing up in a city, and, you know, what you were faced with, you were just basically trying to make it out. And as a kid, having goals and having dreams, you know, playing a hobby that you had a passion for, and being the size that I was, you know, wasn't really given, you know, much chance. A lot of people was criticizing me, but, you know, I stayed humble. I stayed hungry.
How life in urban Baltimore hasn't dramatically changed from the 68 riots to even up until the 2015 death of Freddie Gray. Although many may ask, what does that have to do with the dynasty basketball program, Bobby?
Well, I mean, what I would say is it's an authentic look at the city. Back, you know, in the early 80s. And it's an honest look at the city and what the city was going through. Crime, drugs, you know, the closing of the Bethlehem Sparrows Point plant and what that did to the city. So I think it makes it that much more remarkable for these young men who played on this Dunbar basketball team that kind of defied the odds in so many different ways and were able to, you know, obviously be very successful in high school, and Coach Wade really being, in my opinion, the unsung hero of this story.
For Coach Wade, you know, this is an honor to him in terms of what he was able to do for us, keep those kids focused and on the path of wanting to have something better in life.
The guy who was able to groom not only those four players, you know, Wingate, Reggie Williams, Reggie Lewis, and Muggsy to go on and play in college and play in the pros, but he had 11 guys on his team during those years that went and played Division I basketball, which to me is unprecedented. So
amazing.
You know, I think it's amazing. I think he's the big unsung hero of the story. But anyway, you know, listen, we just wanted to be authentic. We wanted to be honest. And you know, it is a little bit of a social commentary about what's going on in Baltimore, you know, then and today.
Well, if there's one player you really focus on, it's the guy we had on our podcast this morning at bmoshow.com, the 5'3 incredible point guard, Muggsy Bogues, 14-year NBA vet, grew up in the Lafayette Courts housing project on Baltimore's east side, once inadvertently shot. What made him so fascinating?
Well, I think, you know, somebody had said this, I think it was at the Sun, there was a quote that said that he was the, or maybe it was Ali, I'm sorry if I'm forgetting, but said that he was the best player on the court and he didn't have to take a shot. You know, so it was one of those situations where, yes, he was, you know, remarkable being 5'3" and, you know, having this drive and talent and tenacity.
And I wanted to prove, you know, a lot of people wrong that a kid my size is capable of playing the game just like anyone else. So that was a challenge that I had to deal with, and for a guy of my size trying to pursue that dream, you know, was, you know, it got a lot of chuckles, a lot of criticism, but, you know, for me, you know, I just believed in myself and I wanted to prove everybody wrong.
But Muggsy, yeah, Muggsy is an anomaly. I think, I think that, you know, having another Muggsy Bogues come around is going to be a while. You know, I think we'll probably see another LeBron James before we see another Muggsy Bogues. And, you know, his story is just, it's phenomenal. What people don't know is that, you know, Reggie Williams obviously was a star on that Dunbar team, and they were close friends, best friends, and they lived like, you know, three or four floors down from each other in East Baltimore in the housing project. So, but yeah, but Muggsy is a special, you know, he's almost like a superhero, you know, he's a special player, a special person. And we were just happy to be able to tell his story along with the other guys, but he certainly has a unique story, and I hope we did it justice.
Well, you certainly have. I still got a lot to get to as we talk with Bobby Sablehouse, who is the executive producer, one of them, for the Baltimore Boys, which is going to premiere tomorrow, Tuesday night, on ESPN at 8 o'clock, and then August the 13th on ABC. All this talk about Dunbar, and rightfully so, Bobby, but in 1982, the number two high school team in the country was also here in Baltimore, Calvert Hall, led by head coach Mark Amatucci and point guard 5'8 James Pop Tubman, who did grow up in the same neighborhood as Muggsy Bogues. They didn't play a lot against each other at the high school level, but knew about each other. Any mention of Calvert-Hall during this documentary?
Yes. Calvert-Hall, it's always a journey and an exploration when you're making these documentaries. And there was an iteration of this documentary very early on that really spent a lot of time on the Calvert-Hall Dunbar rivalry. We went and interviewed Coach Amatucci, who was very generous with his time and terrific. Yes, I mean, there was this triple overtime game that people in Baltimore who know consider it one of the great high school basketball games in Baltimore history, that Calvert-Hall beat Dunbar in triple overtime at Towson. And that was a phenomenal game, but what people don't recognize is that was also a Dunbar team without Muggsy. And so the next year was a year where, Dunbar had Muggsy, Dunbar was undefeated, so was Calvert-Hall. And unfortunately, it was the greatest game never played. They couldn't put the game on the schedule. And, Calvert-Hall will say that, Dunbar was ducking Calvert-Hall, and Dunbar will say that Calvert-Hall was ducking Dunbar. And I think, that was a game that I think should have been played, but obviously for reasons outside of, of some people's control, it never got done. Calvert-Hall was a part of this documentary at one point, but I think you really have to, we really wanted to focus on Dunbar and the Dunbar in those 81, 80, 83 years and post Dunbar years, so college and in the professional leagues, and we just didn't have the time. So it's something that I wish we could have explored. Believe me, I wish we could have explored more because I think there's some real there was some real good storytelling in there, but we just didn't have the opportunity.
All right, Bob Wade, of course, the father figure to all these kids, a legendary coach, and he had something he called ghetto dumbbells. How were they utilized, even for punishment? They were looking like bricks, but he had other usage for them, Bobby.
Yeah, I mean, what Coach said was, he used these bricks, so, in the fourth quarter, these guys were just going to be better conditioned than the opposing team. And so he used them. Yeah, he used them for punishment, but he used them for conditioning. But I think the really unique story that we actually didn't get to explore in the documentary is the backstory with these bricks. Is that Coach would take a team manager, Coach Wade would take a team manager out to some of the abandoned row houses in Baltimore, and he would actually collect these bricks. So I mean, these truly were with a school that didn't have a lot of money for the athletic program, Coach just, he took the resources that were available to him, and those were the bricks. So it was interesting. We took a brick and we slid it over to David Wingate during one of the interviews. And I think he almost had an anxiety attack because, it brought back memories of him having to hold those things and run with them on the court.
Does the film get into the connection between Dunbar and Georgetown? Of course, Reggie Williams and Wingate both played a part in national titles there, and Muggsy told us.
For the Georgetown situation, Coach Tom has always said that the saddest thing that happened, that he didn't recruit me heavy because he felt like he would have had another one of his championships under his belt.
Yeah, we heard the same thing. We heard that Coach Wade had been to an event down in D.C. for Coach Thompson, and Coach Thompson went over to him and mentioned that same thing. He's like, I should have signed Muggsy Bogues, and I would have won another national championship. So that's been confirmed on Coach Wade's end. And we do explore it a lot. We obviously, David Wingate graduated a year early than Muggsy and Williams and Lewis, and so he went on and paved the way at Georgetown. And then obviously Williams went there, won a national championship, and he was the MVP of the national championship. Yep. against Fly Slammajama.
Houston, yeah.
So we do explore it pretty specifically.
Bobby, what about the lack of a relationship Dunbar had with the University of Maryland in light of some bad situations, namely Ernie Graham?
Yeah, it was a falling out. Coach just felt like, one of our players that was there, Ernest Graham, that wasn't treated the way he should have, and he kind of stared us away from running a little bit.
The irony is Bob Wade went on to coach there temporarily and was unceremoniously dumped, and to me unfairly. I'm sure that was explored at some level, but Muggsy told us Maryland wasn't even on his radar back then.
Yeah, we don't really explore why the players didn't go there. But what we do explore is absolutely Coach Wade, after Len Bias's death and Lefty Giselle's departure, we absolutely explore Coach Wade's tenure. Although short, we do explore his tenure at University of Maryland, pretty closely. So, I think some people that don't know that story well will definitely get a little insight into how things transpired at Maryland.
And last but not least here, Reggie Lewis, who was known as the sixth man for Dunbar, overcame the streets, was in the middle of an outstanding NBA career in Boston, and then his heart failed on him and he passed away. Does his untimely death at the age of 27...
That's the sad part right there. You know, it just don't feel right with him not being right beside us, because Reg was such a big part of us, even though he was the sixth man, but he was just like a starter because he came in and saved so many games, and it just brings so many memories back. But we're just so thankful and grateful that, you know, he's still part of us. You know, the spirit always continued to live on, and he's looking down among us, and he's smiling that this debut is about to take place, because that's where it all started, you know, back in Baltimore, growing up in the city, you know, having those type of dreams floating around out here as kids and trying to manifest it to become something positive in our lives.
How does that get addressed during the documentary?
Yeah, it's a pretty major part of the documentary. Reggie Lewis is just one of those terrific stories. If people don't know, you know, he was the sixth man off the bench at Dunbar. He never started a game. I mean, that's how deep they were. You know, it was really not a heralded recruit. Didn't get many scholarship offers. Jim Calhoun saw him play once and saw something special in Reggie, and signed him to Northeastern. And so we explore his time in Northeastern. We explore his, you know, obviously him getting drafted by the Celtics, him being the captain of the Celtics after Larry Bird, and then, you know, his collapse on the court during a playoff game against the Charlotte Hornets that actually had Muggsy Bogues and David Wingate on the team.
Wow.
And we explore that, but we explore his death. We explore, the doctor, this Dr. Mudge, who misdiagnosed him. We explore, the heart, issues that he had that were genetic. We also explore, the drug use, alleged drug use. So we go really deep into the Reggie Lewis story, probably more than any other player. We really explore his post Dunbar days more than anybody.
Yeah. One other thing in closing, I wanted to mention about Dunbar. I talked about how they might have played Calvert Hall at times. They didn't want to play him, but they would virtually travel anywhere to play any team, whether it be in Camden, New Jersey.
Number one game that really stands out was the Camden game, and it was considered the number one team in the country. They had the number one player in the country in Billy Thompson, and Coach Wade was just talking so positively about this team, and it was all this and all that. And once I walked into the gym, which they never had been beaten before, you had the whole stand just laughing at this little kid walking in the gym. Why did they bring this little kid along? And, you know, of course, after the ball went up in the air, I had the last laugh. You know, we went out there and destroyed the team. And then we wind up getting a standing ovation from that crowd.
DeMatha down the road in near D.C., this was really one of the first high school traveling squads, if you will, Bobby.
Yeah, I mean, they went – I mean, listen, you know, Coach Wade knew he had something special, and knew if Dunbar and Baltimore were going to get the respect, they were going to have to go on the road and they were going to have to beat the best. And they did. Like you mentioned, they beat Camden, DeMatha. They went up to New York and beat the best teams in New York. I think one of the challenges for us was finding adversity on the court, because they didn't have much. They beat most of the teams that they played very handedly. So, one of the big challenges with the film is they went on and beat teams by 20, 30 points that were nationally ranked. So it was truly a remarkable team and proud to be able to tell the story.
Hey, Bobby, appreciate you taking the time. I had a lot of questions to get to. You answered them all. Now all that's left is to watch the documentary, The Baltimore Boys, about an hour and a half, premiering at 8 p.m., Tuesday on ESPN, August the 13th on ABC, and if not, DVR it. Bobby, thanks for taking the time. Tremendous job.
Thanks for having me on. I really look forward to hearing people's thoughts, and hopefully we'll follow up and do another conversation soon.
I would like to do that once I view the documentary, indeed. Thank you.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.